Relationship Psych, the podcast, helping you design the relationship you want. With couples therapy costing a pretty penny, Relationship Psych gives you access to couples therapy insights without spending a dime. Tune in for discussions on communication, managing conflict, recovering from infidelity, attachment, and more. I'm your host, Amber Dawson. I'm a psychologist and couples therapist. A few of my favorite things are my husband, grapes, and my adorable little dog, Riggs. Simply by listening, you're going to get tools to help you and your partner create a loving and harmonious relationship that can withstand the test of time. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be misconstrued for specific relationship advice. For advice for your specific relationship, seek out a local couples therapist in your area. Welcome back to Relationship Psych, the podcast. Today, I have a special guest with me. We've got a 12-hour time difference, so glad to have this guest with us today, Ricky Aronson. He's an endocrinologist, geriatrician, head of the geriatrics at the Royal Perth Hospital, and award-winning medical leader. He's the author of the book, When Are Women Are Superior to Men, The Real Secret to a Fantastic Marriage, Joyful Parenting, and Better Sex. I cannot wait to talk more about this book because I want to know the secrets. All right, so welcome to the show, Ricky. Super glad to have you.
Such a pleasure and privilege to join you. Thanks so much.
So Ricky, I'm curious, when I read that you're an endocrinologist, geriatrician, I'm like, how do we get from that to writing a book about relationships? What inspired you? What made you want to go in that path?
Well, that's such a long story, but I'll try and give it a shorter version of it as possible. When I became a doctor, I really had no great ambition. I thought I'd be just like a regular doctor. And as I progressed in my career, I kept getting promoted, which I must say irritated my wife a bit because she's also a doctor and she kept going, it's so sexist, they keep promoting you. So it couldn't possibly have been that I had any abilities. But as I was sort of climbing the chain, I got to experience more and more training in personnel management and relationship management. And one of the things about endocrinology is a lot of the experience that you have is counseling couples in some ways, because people come to you with hormonal problems, and those hormonal issues affect their relationships. And not infrequently, people come to you with relationship problems, which they think are hormonal problems. And that's something that you then have to deal with. And often couples are quite distressed by men coming in with low libido, women having emotional hormonal problems and libido problems. So those kinds of things were very confronting, I guess, as a young doctor when you haven't had a lot of experience. And then throughout all of this, I was incredibly lucky to marry an amazing woman. My wife's actually a medical inventor, an award-winning medical inventor. She's an emergency specialist, and she does like 500 things all the time that are just extraordinary. So through all of that, I was kind of growing and admiring her, really. But at the same time, I was climbing up through the ranks in medicine. And I came to realize that one of the things that many doctors do very poorly is relationships and people. So when you go to medical school, you train as a doctor, but you don't really train very well as a person and as a person who has to deal with emotional people who are dying, who have relatives who are dying, have relatives who are sick. And I always felt that was this real hole in medicine, that we get taught how to be doctors, but doctors don't really manage diseases. They manage people who have diseases, and it's the people that you're actually managing. So that became something of a passion of mine, to the point that I started to run courses for doctors in my state about how to manage people and how to understand better what makes a team happy when you're running a team of nurses and allied health specialists, how to understand patients better and where they're coming from and what would make relationships in the workplace work, what makes a relationship with a patient work, and those kinds of non-clinical skills. And that course became very, very popular in my state. And then one day my wife said, you know, I'm going to come to your course because I need the professional development points. Not because she wanted to hear me at the course, because of course that would be impossible.
Not just to hear you.
Yeah, she went, I need the professional development points. And she said, I'm sure the course, this was her exact line. I'm sure the course will be very boring and I'll learn nothing, but I'm going to come along anyway. You know, wives are good at building their husband's confidence. It's their main job. So
good words of encouragement.
There you go. So she came along to the course and she absolutely loved it. And she said, wow, that was totally amazing. Everyone loved what you were teaching them. You've got to write a book. And I'd never really thought about that. But when she who must be obeyed commanded me, you've got to write a book, I was like, well, okay, I better write a book. And I started writing about relationships very generically, about conflict avoidance, about relationship management. And I guess really one of the things that we all have with experience is we look back on our lives and we say, hey, don't I wish I could go back 20 years and teach the younger me what I know now about people and management of relationships. And I kind of felt, I want to do that for people. I want to write these books that someone can read, that I can say, hey, I wish I could have read this book 20 years ago. So let me give it to you and see if it helps you. And then the culmination of all of this, I was writing and writing and writing and about all kinds of things. And I'd written thousands and thousands and thousands of pages. And then I was sitting on the ward one night in the office, and there were a bunch of nurses there, and they were getting very frustrated. And the one nurse was on the phone to her husband, telling him he's got to feed the kids and what he has to do. And then she put down the phone and she said to the other nurses, how's it possible that my husband's had these kids for 10 years and he still doesn't know that they have to be fed every night? And then the nurse sitting next to her said, well, you know, I've just got off the phone to my husband. How does he not know that they need to be bathed every night? And then one of the other nurses said, you know, having a husband is like having an extra child. And then I was laughing and I just said to them, you know, you're just all expecting too much. Women are superior to men. And then they laughed and they said, you should write a book about that. And I went, actually, that's a brilliant idea. So I really wanted to write this book that would appreciate women. I think women are amazing and these incredible creations that we're so lucky to have, wives and mothers. And I just wanted to write something that appreciated them. And in the book, I laugh a lot at what wives find irritating about husbands as well. Mm. So that's a very long answer to a short question.
I mean, it sounds like it was accumulation of like a lot of experiences, a lot of things that happened in your life that pointed you to great ideas. And I think with any kind of piece of work that we come to, usually there's a good story behind it. So love the story.
Well, thank you.
So I guess just to answer that as well.
I mean, yes, one of the nice things about being a doctor, I've always thought it's one of the weirdest professions in the world. Because the things that happen to us, I mean, I'm sure every profession is weird in a certain way, but when you're a doctor, you know, people come into your office and they just take off their clothes. And you're kind of like, it's easy to take that for granted because you do it every day, but it's a bit weird. And then next thing you are feeling things that you wouldn't normally want to feel, or, you know, people are telling you about their sex lives and about their personal lives. And, you know, people walk to my office, I go, hey, how's your thyroid? Next thing I'm hearing about their marital issues and all kinds of things. So often when people see a doctor and they connect with that doctor, they just want to talk about their lives. So you're quite right. There is an accumulation of the most fascinating stories and experiences. And that's one thing that I also put in my books is interesting anecdotes of weird things that I've come across in patient stories. So that's a fascinating part of medicine.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're right. The whole process of medicine is kind of weird. You touch and would do all sorts of weird things. And people also go in seeing a doctor like undressing or doing things they would never do in front of most strangers. But hey, it's the nature of the relationship. So I know, speaking from personal experience, when you go through lots of medical things, it's always nice when you have someone performing your procedure that seems a bit like a person rather than like some robot or an emotionally stunted person or something like that. And you're like, thank gosh, this doctor was nice. Goes a long way in making your experience getting medical care much nicer.
For sure. And that's something which I try to work very hard to inspire other doctors, because it's actually what I love about medicine is my connection with patients and the relationships and the closeness and actually trying to make people feel better. It's not just about healing their medical illnesses. It's often about connecting with them and making them feel better. Often patients come and see me and the thing they least want to speak about is their medical problems. So I think that's actually something quite special and quite a privilege. So something I certainly don't take for granted. And, you know, I really enjoy trying to help people.
That's amazing. So it sounds like through this process, one of the big themes is you learn how to make people feel valued, feel happy. It sounds like you've written about that a bit in your book as well. So what are some of the themes that you have come up with about what makes people feel valued and happy?
Well, that's a fascinating question. It's interesting that the greatest reason why people get divorced, certainly in Australian statistics, and I'd suspect it'd be worldwide, is lack of attention. So it's the biggest reason named for divorce in Australia is that a partner feels that they're just not getting the attention they need from their partner. So I think one of the biggest things about relationships is to acknowledge what people do and to praise and appreciate them. And in doing so, if you constantly praise and appreciate your partner, it actually grows your affection for them because you admire what a great person they are. When you actually take the time to recognize, you walk in the front door, you know, there's, I'm not going to say men or women, because I think many women work, my wife works. And you know, when a person walks in from work, my wife always says to me, the thing I want most from you is a hot meal waiting for me. And, you know, just to a nice greeting and a hot meal. And then it's so nice if you can just appreciate your partner and the things they do for you and praise them for the things they do. It makes them feel, you know, so much better about life. But you grow in your love for them if you appreciate them and they feel better about you. And there's nothing that creates resentment more than lack of gratitude. So anyone who's taken for granted starts to resent it after a while and say, hey, well, why should I bother? I don't even get anything out of this. Right. So I think that's a big, big thing, is showing that constant gratitude, appreciation, praise. I think one of the problems that people have is for some reason, people have this need to say negative things and criticize. But actually, most of the time, there's no need to do that. I mean, if you don't like something, what do you benefit the world by telling someone that you don't like the meal they've just cooked for you? I mean, what are you saying to your partner? They just can go, well, hey, I don't want to cook for you anymore because you don't appreciate it. So I think that's one of the other problems, is people talk about constructive criticism, but it's very seldom that criticism is actually constructive.
Right.
And one of the things I say in my book is that conflict avoidance is all about timing. And this is something I heard from someone wiser than me years ago, and I never forgot it. So I was sitting, you know, somewhere, and someone was giving a lecture, and they said, look, if you want to criticize someone, never do it at the time. Always wait until a more opportune time when you have good, you know, relations at the time, when you're feeling warm towards each other, and then bring it up and say, hey, you know, I don't appreciate this, or I don't really like this so much. Can we talk about it? And even in something as mundane as a cooked meal, you know, if someone's put effort into doing something and at the time they're actually emotionally invested in that, you turn and say, hey, I don't like the food you just cooked me. It really doesn't look nice. It doesn't feel nice. And they just get resentful. But if you said to them 3 or 4 days later, you know something, you're such a great cook, but the chicken you made me 3 nights ago, it's just not my favorite. I much prefer this other one that you make. They're much less likely to get upset about that. So I think that's a big factor as well.
And what you just gave with the chicken example as well, that I want to highlight, is you led with a praise and you ended with, and you gave the negative piece, and then you ended with what you do want. You didn't end on the criticism. You ended on your positive need. And that I find goes a really long way when you can like talk about something that's going right, like give a positive and talk about not just what you don't want, but tell your partner what you do want. That's the recipe for getting your needs met. So I love that example you just gave.
I'm totally agree with you really, really strongly. And I think it's one of the things that's so important, is that people often criticize without attaching what they actually want. Right. So you can't possibly get your needs met in a relationship if you can't work out what you want and communicate that with your partner. And that's a big problem. I'm actually dealing with someone at work at the moment who's like that. They're just resentful and miserable about everything. And I keep trying to bring them towards something more outcome-based and something more positive and say, but I want to help you, but let's talk about what you actually want. And interestingly, that's a big part of family meetings in geriatric medicine. So in one of my other specialties, geriatric medicine, which is looking after old people. And that can be very difficult because elderly people often don't get better in hospital. They often get worse. And it causes a lot of stress and often anger with the family. They feel they brought in this relative and then they got worse instead of better. So you have these family meetings where a doctor and their team are trying to communicate, well, this is actually what's really going on. We're not making them worse, but despite our best efforts, they have deteriorated. How are we going to manage this? And one of the things you try to do at that meeting is direct people towards positivity. And otherwise, the meeting just disintegrates. So that's all about saying, well, this is a problem. Now, how are we going to deal with, how do we move forward with it? How do we focus on positives? What can we do for you? How do we make you feel better? What would you like communicated? And this is what we need to do from here. And so relationships are no different to that. You always want to be directing everything towards outcomes and positive outcomes. How do we make this better? What can we do for each other? How do we take care of each other?
Yeah, That's super important. So you said you led, one of the things you led with is one of the reasons that people get divorced is lack of attention, and to acknowledge and praise and appreciate what people do. And, you know, I talk about this as well. And to my clients, I notice some of the resistance that people give me is to say things like, they should just know that I care about them, or I never got that growing up, so why should I do it? Or they're grown adults, like, why should I have to praise them? I'm not their parent. How would you handle resistance like that to praising and giving attention and showing appreciation to your partner?
Well, that's such a fantastic and broad question. I guess the first thing to say to that is that in relationships, feeling valued and making someone else feel valued is at the heart of a relationship, because ultimately, if you don't feel that your partner values you, that's a real problem emotionally. I think it's incredibly important for couples to see themselves as a team. And what some of the sentences that you were saying there are problematic for relationships, because they were all about me, I. Why should I have to praise right. you? Why should I have to do this for you? Why should we do that? And that's really not a good construct for a relationship. So something also I learned from someone else, which I thought was such a wise statement, is many years ago, someone said to me, the ultimate relationship is when both partners commit fully and unselfishly to the needs of the other. Then you have the perfect relationship. So in any issue, whether it be coming together or dealing with conflict, both partners have to regard the relationship as being bigger than themselves. And anything in that relationship is shared. So if I'm unhappy about something, then it's a problem for both of us, because if I'm unhappy, the relationship's unhappy, and that infects both of us. And if I'm feeling that I'm not getting the praise and recognition in this relationship that I need, partners can't dismiss your feelings as being unimportant. Say, well, why should I do that? That's not a good attitude to coming together. The attitude is, if you have that need, we need to talk about how we make that work for both of us. And within that, you need to both be doing that. So it's not just about my needs, but it's about yours as well. What do you need? What do you want? And how do we make that happen for you?
Yeah, I love that. So coming together, talking about it, how do we meet each other's needs, and giving some, whatever your words were, like some sacrifice, whatever, I don't remember your words, but for the other person, like being willing to give to the other. And in my experience, but maybe it's resentment of many years that, you know, unmet needs have gone on. So people are reluctant to want to do something nice for their partner, or maybe they haven't grown up with it, or this is new to them. But I see couples really thrive when they start being willing to give love in the way their partner needs it, rather than in the way they prefer to show it or they think it should go. And I encourage people, just try it. If your partner has told you what they want to feel loved and valued, what do you have to lose by trying it and seeing how it goes?
But you actually made such a more profound point there as well. I totally agree. But I think the profound point you also made there was that ultimately, relationships are about giving, not taking. And taking is actually quite a negative thing in some ways, because you don't build anything by just taking all the time, and it doesn't make you feel good, and your partner doesn't feel good. But if two people recommit to the relationship, it's all about starting giving again. And I've got an interesting couple that I know. They're not patients of mine. They're friends of mine. And I always feel so sad that I can't be their relationship counselor, because I always feel I just want to go to them and say, start giving to each other again. Yeah. I think one of the ways I'd give an example of their relationship is that they're reasonably wealthy people, and the husband wanted a certain book. So he was going to buy it for himself. So as his birthday present, his wife gave him a gift voucher to buy the book he was going to buy anyway. So and I always looked at them. I thought, if only the two of you could learn to start giving to each other again, your relationship would be happy. And I think that's one of the keys to fixing any relationship problems. I call it outcome is proportional to investment. Mm-hmm. In anything in life, it doesn't matter whether it's business, relationship, money, your career. Most of the time, it's hard work and giving that are going to get you to a successful point. And it's when couples stop giving to each other that they run into problems, exactly what you're saying, when you're going, well, why should I give this? And the answer is, the reason you should give it is actually for yourself, because if your partner's happy, you'll be happy, then you're both happy, everyone's happy. What greater gift can you give to yourself?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So what's an example of something you give to your wife and your wife gives to you?
Okay. I guess one of the things that, well, my wife, by the way, is the most incredible unfailing support to me in pretty much everything I do. I couldn't have been a successful person without my wife, because in terms of what she gives to me, you know, she just takes care of me, and I work very, very hard, and I have so many different careers, really. But she's always like a rock. She supports me and takes care of everything I need. And she's always, I think one of the greatest ways I can describe how my wife gives to me, and this will appeal to people to know about egalitarian marriages, but when we got married, we're both junior doctors together, working together. And she said to me, look, I work as a doctor full-time. You work as a doctor full-time. Why should I have to do the cooking and the cleaning and housework if we're both working the same number of hours? You should share with me. And I said, absolutely. And I must say, I was often really pretty slow and useless at certain things that she was much better at, but I really committed to try and do it. And one day, many years later, when my career kind of became, I was just sort of sitting on all these committees and doing all these things. I was coming home later and later at night, and she came to me one day and she said, and I was in the kitchen and I was kind of trying to wash dishes and like even slower than my natural speed, which is super slow. It's like a superpower I have, just super slow. And she just looked at me really sadly and she was like, you can't do this anymore. I need to do this for you and take care of you. And it was like the greatest moment of my whole life, to be honest. People say, well, having a baby, you know, getting married. I was like, the greatest moment of my life. My wife came and said, hey, listen, I'm going to cook dinner for you when you're working really late, and I'll clean up for you because I can see you've just got nothing left in the tank. But I think the important thing is that I need to do that for her as well. So when she's working long Sunday shifts, working evening shifts, I make sure that she's got a hot meal when she comes home, that the house is in order. I have to tell you, it's like such a thing. Like I take such pride in trying to make the house look really good when she comes home from work. Like I polish every surface and I'm like, and she always goes like, hey, why are you having dinner at 11 at night? And I'm like, I've been trying to make the house look really good for you when you come home. So I think I don't want to say that I'm better than anyone else or anything, but I think in terms of attitudes in marriage, I think that it's not about who does what in the marriage. I think that's one of the things people become so preoccupied with. Is the woman the one washing the dishes and cooking, or the man doing it? I think it's about both of you taking care of each other and saying, hey, if you're the one who needs the help, I'm going to help you. And I'm going to help you in the way that you need.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it changes over the course of a relationship as well. And I think my husband and I have gone through many seasons where he cooks more or I clean more or cook more. And like it's gone through seasons and we change it depending on the demands of our life and our schedule. It can really change. I was trying to think about like, what are the ways my husband and I give to each other? It's certainly not cleaning the house and make sure it looks good. That is neither of our strong suit. Neither of us are doing that. But I was trying to think, like, things he does for me is he will, I like to cook less. He likes to cook. I do cook, but I don't like it. So one way he does show love is to make sure that there's a meal done for me, because I finish work usually at 8:00 PM and he has dinner ready at 8:05 PM. And it's just really nice, like, because usually I'm starving and I work in my house since the pandemic. So I go downstairs and dinner's ready and it's lovely. So that's a really great thing he does for me. And also, like, I must be a quality time person. That must be one of my love languages, but I really love spending an hour watching a TV show, connecting with him there. Like, some people say watching a TV show isn't a connecting thing for them, but it really is for me, just to have his presence next to me every day as a ritual. And he's really committed to that. And I'm like, it's very important to me. So he just shows up for that on time, holds my hand. And it's just a really simple thing that I can count on, that he's going to be there and we're going to do it together. Sometimes we talk, but most of the time we don't. I just want him there. So I love that. That's one couple ways he gives to me. I was trying to think, how do I give to him? I was thinking this morning as a good example. I've been feeling a bit under the weather all week. And he leaves for work much earlier than I do, because I don't leave. He does to go to work. And what I try to do is get up out of bed and make sure I can kiss him before he leaves. So today I set my alarm last night for a little bit later, but still before the time he was going to leave the house, so I could run downstairs and give him a kiss before he walked out the door. And every day when I do this and I go and I put in the effort to give him that kiss, I see him smile and I see, you know, his eyes crinkle and he lights up before he leaves. And I think, like, that's worth it for me to get up a few more minutes early, or to get up and go back to sleep if I'm, you know, having a bad day. to be able to just see.
You're a very special person. You're a very special person because if my wife was asleep in bed, I was leaving for work. If I just woke her up, she'd be more likely to come down and kill me than kiss me goodbye. But it's actually interesting because there's some evidence that that's incredibly good for relationships. Just kissing hello and goodbye is incredibly important for relationships. So I think that's a very special thing. And watching TV together, I totally agree. The only problem is you're just demonstrating a lot of superiority to me in this interview, because firstly, your husband sounds like a much more accomplished chef than I am. So my wife would be really jealous if she was listening right now. And as I wouldn't go wake her up and tell her because she'd kill me, as I just told you. But the other thing is that my wife and I were watching TV together, and I actually think it is quite a special thing, because we may not like the idea of it, but TV's become such a big part of everyone's lives. That's just the reality. And watching a TV program together is quite bonding. You talk about it, you have something to talk about it, you experience it together. So it's actually a mutual experience. And when you don't do that, what tends to happen is that the two partners go and watch TV separately, or someone's sitting on their phone in the lounge playing and you're watching TV in the bedroom. So actually doing that together, holding hands, being close to each other, is a very special thing to do. The only problem is, I told you, you're superior to me, because my wife and I were doing that for a long time. And then she got sick of the fact that I always used to fall asleep because I was so tired from work. And then I'd wake up and ask her what was going on. And she used to find that so irritating. So I've actually been kicked out of the bedroom TV watching. And I'm now bonded with my children. Now, this is even worse. You're never going to want me on the show after you hear this. But I've ended up bonding with my children, watching anime of all things together. So we've been watching anime as a group. And so I've been kicked out.
Well, you know, we have our strengths and we have our weaknesses, just like you are a house cleaning strength and that is my weakness. And so I think for those of us listening, you know, hey, if you're listening and you're like, those are things I do not do, but my partner would like if I do this, totally fine. We don't all have to be perfect people or anything close to it. We just got to find a few things here and there that give to our partner, that our partner can give to us, that works for us and our unique relationships. You don't have to be like Ricky or I. You can do your own thing. Great examples of how we're different. Amazing. So when couples, it sounds like, you know, we've been talking about really giving and how you can give. And some of the resistance I hear is like, there's conflict or we're not getting along. When couples have been stuck in conflict, what are some tips or ideas, strategies you have to help couples through conflict and resolve that to have a more peaceful or happy relationship?
Well, I guess the first thing is the best fight is one that you never have. And I am a hugely committed in life to a philosophy which I call work with, not against, which is works really well at work as well. And that is, if you're entering any situation, you're always going to do better by finding ways to get along with other people rather than clashing with them. And you can usually find some way to compromise and negotiate. And most of all, just find a way to work with the person that you're with. If there's things that they're bringing to you, even if you don't like them, work with those things, and you can usually find a way to make that work for both of you. Try and create a win-win. And I think that's a big thing in arguments, is to try and divorce yourself from ego. So one of my other favorite things that I have in the world, I don't know if people like it, but I like it. I put it in all my books, is this rule that I call the stop rule that I made up. And the stop rule is the best way to avoid conflict in life generally, not just with your partner, but with everyone. And the stop rule goes like this: stop, define your desired outcome, then proceed calmly in the correct direction. And the reason why that's so important is that most of the time when we get angry, we respond to that anger rather than what's in our best interest or in the interests of our relationship. So you get a text on your phone and it hits a nerve and you type a response and you send it. And then you're suddenly embroiled in this terrible conflict with someone that you actually like. And then you find out afterwards that the tone wasn't even what they really meant by that text. Well, it's the same with a partner. You know, you're in a bad mood, they're in a bad mood, someone says something, and suddenly you're embroiled in this terrible conflict. And once people start fighting, it's much more difficult to extricate from that, because it becomes about winning and it becomes about ego and nobody wants to say sorry. And then people start to say things that once, you know, you can't take them back once they're out there. And sometimes people say things they actually mean that are very hurtful. So the best way to stop that is to become an outcome-based person. And it's something which I try very hard to do in life. And I find it's something I have to condition myself every day I wake up in the morning, particularly running a complicated department with people that like to fight with me and fight with other people, is to every day I get up and I remind myself about the stop rule. So it doesn't matter whether I'm getting an email, whether I'm in a meeting, whether I'm talking to my wife, I'm always saying, hey, what do I really want out of this? And does it matter? Because often with outcome, if you think about an outcome, someone says something or they send you a text and you go, but stop to find an outcome. What would I achieve by engaging in a fight right now? What am I actually going to change in the world? What am I going to make better? And then you just realize, well, I'll be so much better off just ignoring this and not responding to it, because there's no positive outcome in engaging negatively. And it's the same with your husband or wife. When things get a little bit out of control and it's often just a bad mood or someone's upset or something's not going well, and instead of fighting with them, you think to yourself, I love this person. I don't actually want to have a major fight. It doesn't suit me. It's not in my interests to have a fight with this person. What outcome do I want? I want my relationship to work. I love this person. And then you stop yourself and go, just be quiet. Just accept. And then often you can work out what's actually wrong with the person, because sometimes your spouse might be treating you a certain way because they're upset. And when you stop and think about that, you realize the last thing you should be doing is jumping on this person who's actually upset. What they actually need is sympathy and patience and support. So then the question then is, what happens when people are actually fighting? And that was your real question to me. Well, what happens when people are fighting? What strategies can they use? And I think the biggest and most important strategy there is to be a team. And to be a team player and say, well, look, if we're fighting, it's a problem for both of us. And then there is no room for blame. Because any problem that you have is my problem as well. Any problem I have is your problem as well. It's a relationship problem. We need to get together and start talking about what's going wrong and trying to be outcome-based, solving it. How do we make this better? How do we come together again? And there's just no role for blame or anger in that. You've just got to work together. So I guess that's a very short answer to a very complex question.
Well, I mean, it sounds like some of the things you're talking about is remembering, like, just remember that you are on the same team. And in whether you're to have just gotten a message or you're in the middle of a fight, to think about what is the outcome you want to achieve? Are you trying to just feel better? So in order to feel better, you're going to say the next spiteful thing that comes out of your mouth because you're going to get momentary reprieve. Is that really what you want? So, or can you pause, think about it and decide, okay, let me hear them out. Or how can I talk about this in a different way? So it sounds like you're encouraging people to be thoughtful about the choices that they make in these moments and really think about, how do they want to show up? What do they want in the end? Is it just to blow off steam in that moment, or do they want a good relationship for the long term?
Absolutely. And I think one of the problems is that humans by nature are competitive, and it's actually in our DNA. I mean, we compete to survive. Our genes, it's quite a remarkable thing, but our genes compete to survive.
Yeah.
You know, sperms compete to become a human being. And then when all of our genes are constantly competing, who's going to survive? And, you know, men and women are picking what they think is the most select member of the gene pool effectively to give their genes to. So that's just the nature of survival on the planet. We are competitive. And so people have a natural tendency when they argue to want to win. And in a relationship, that doesn't work, because that's just about power and ego. And that's never going to work in a team relationship. So most of the time in an argument, the best win is actually if the two of you walk away having learned something positive and put your relationship in a better space. So a passionate embrace at the end of a fight is a much better outcome than screaming and disliking each other. So if people, I think even being quiet and walking away is actually a win, because you can say to yourself, well, I've not had this horrible fight that I could have had with my partner, which would have taken us to a horrible place. Instead, I've been able to walk away and things are peaceful. That's actually a win. So I think it's just about reframing what winning actually looks like in a relationship. It's definitely not about having the more forceful argument.
What about like walking away if one person thinks that walking away is a win and the other person doesn't think walking away is a win? How do you handle that?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, that's a totally different thing when you have an avoidant partner who doesn't want to engage on something that you need to actually talk about. And every time their partner tries to bring them to negotiating table, they walk off and turn their back on that. I mean, that's a very difficult thing, I think, because again, for a partner who wants to talk about something, if they have someone who won't engage, any negotiation has to be bilateral, and you can't have peace partners if there's only one person. So there isn't really an easy answer to that. I think, you know, that's a time when sometimes you do need professional help, I guess. If you're approaching your partner and saying, look, I actually have a real relationship concern. I'm very worried about this. It's not working for me. It's making me very unhappy. And their response to that is to run away every time you bring up the topic and refuse to engage. I think if you tried enough times, the next step is to say, look, I actually think we need to go see someone professional, because I can't get you to talk to me about something that's fundamentally important to our happiness, and we need to talk about it. So, but that's a huge issue, because I think particularly many men tend to be a bit avoidant when it comes to certain emotional discussions. They sometimes have more difficulty engaging in them. And I think that's one of the things that you find in relationships, is that it's a typical sort of wife line. Why won't you just talk to me? Why won't you just come out and talk about these problems? And for men who are inclined often to compartmentalize a lot in their minds, and by the way, that's a scientifically proven issue, that men compartmentalize more in their brains. It's been proven on MRIs that men are much more focused in the way they use their brains, and women are much more diverse, which is actually quite interesting. It's why when men sort of get really focused on something, and you can't, what frustrates my wife is she knows that if on my phone, I'm pretty much useless to the universe. So she tends to often snatch it out of my hands if she wants. I always say, I can text and talk to you. And she's like, no, you can't. And she takes it away. So I think for men, some men, that is a defense mechanism that isn't actually intended to be negative, or, you know, they're not meaning to harm their wives or their partners by doing it, but they have a defense mechanism that they retreat into this sort of empty, this box where they kind of box themselves away. And it's quite difficult for wives, because they're trying to get their husband to talk to them about something really important, and the husband's retreating further and further into this box. And the more they try and get the husband to talk, the more he retreats and the more threatened he feels. So that's a very, and I think that's one thing, by the way, why women are amazing, because I think it's something that they do incredibly well. Women are actually very good at getting the best out of men often, and actually finding a way to reach them emotionally and get them to engage. And ultimately, I think it's nice for all of us, whether it be men or women, to have a partner who, if you are that way inclined, works really hard on understanding relationships do require emotional engagement and communication. And that may be uncomfortable for me, but it's something I have to work on myself and something I have to work through, because most partners need that.
Yeah, totally. So you're not saying, it's always the best thing just to walk away. You're saying in some cases it might be that, but it sounds like you're also saying at times the better thing to do with conflict situations or disagreements is find a way to emotionally engage and be present and connect. And that can be the better way through sometimes.
I think the only time it's better to walk away is when it's a worthless fight. Yes. And, you know, there's no reason to have this fight, then just walk away. But if it's about an emotional issue or relationship issue, then generally speaking, it's not fair to your partner to walk away from something important. So I totally agree.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about fighting, a little bit about value and happiness. So if couples are hearing this and they're thinking, okay, maybe we can work on some of these conflict things and bring a little bit of value in. When you think about just having a happy or a positive relationship, any other tips or key things that you think are important to nourish your relationship with?
Wow. Yeah. That's, I guess it's also dependent on the relationship. Everyone has different needs, and it's really, you know, about communication and finding out what your partner needs from you. But I think if you get the fundamentals right and they're good, generally the relationship's going to work. So I think the first one is evidence-based. The most important aspect of relationships is actually friendship. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of studies, the thing that couples cite as being the most important thing to them is that their partner's their best friend. And, you know, passion and sex are great, and most people want to have those things. But ultimately, you're going to spend more time talking to your partner than admiring them or having sex with them. That's true. And this, I mean, certainly that's the experience for most people. And so it's about finding someone that you really get along well with, that you really click with as a friend. And then building on that friendship. And building on friendship is all about spending quality time together. So I think that's, again, the issue of investment in your partner. There's a real, and that was the issue with divorce, that people get divorced because they don't give enough attention to their partner. There's real threat in the modern day that people get really busy and they're working and they work very preoccupied by their jobs and work, and it's on their mind all the time, and kids are very distracting. You just can't afford to let that happen. Mm-hmm. You have to give your partner the attention they need. You have to give them the care that they need. So you need to ensure that you have protected time together where you can talk about the things that you value, talk about the things that are meaningful in your relationship, and also not just talk about functional things. So that's also a threat to relationships when couples just start to talk about, when are the kids due at school? What's for dinner? How are we going to go shopping? You actually need to talk about each other to each other, heart to heart, and stay those close emotional friends where you're actually communicating in feelings and closeness. And you need to protect time in most circumstances for intimacy, for sex, for quality time together, go on date nights. And I think that's another sad thing that you see in relationships often, is that people get, it's a wonderful thing that people are committed to their kids. But the problem is that if the marriage relationship breaks down, the kids suffer as well. Mm-hmm. And that happens in many different ways, not just divorce, but if the relationship fractures and becomes difficult, it's a huge emotional strain for the kids. So you just really have to protect your relationship as well. And you need to be strong enough to get a babysitter and go out on a date night, find great things to do together, go on a picnic, go stay, spend an evening somewhere smart together, have that special protected intimacy time, and make sure that you protect your relationships. I guess that's the most important evidence-based thing, is make sure you keep building on your friendship, make sure you keep building on your closeness, and make sure that other issues don't invade your relationship to the point that you get distracted from what's really important, which is maintaining closeness and giving to each other.
So what are some ways that, sounds like you and your wife are very busy, both doctors, what's a way that over the years you've been able to maintain your friendship?
Well, actually, I've always thought that's a really interesting question about whether you should marry a doctor if you're a doctor, because on one hand, you have so much to talk about all the time that you understand. And medicine has many idiosyncrasies about it, where if you're not a doctor, and again, I don't want to say this to sound like we're special or anything or better than anyone else. I'm sure it's the same for everyone in any career, but often there are things about the practice of medicine that really people who are not doctors wouldn't see the same way that you would as a doctor. So it's really special being able to offload on each other. And my wife and I have always said, a lot of times doctors are talking about the career is so stressful and they need to go to these meetings where they share their stressful experiences together. And that's a way that they don't, become too overwhelmed with stress and unhappiness. We never have that because we do that all the time. I mean, my wife was doing telehealth today, which is quite a weird form of health in Australia, where we've got all these remotes. Australia's just this massive country with very few people. So it's like no one lives here, but it's absolutely massive. So you've got these remote hospitals all over the place being run by nurses. And then my wife goes on a video with the nurses and tells them what to do with patients. So she was telling me about all the cases that she saw today. And, it's a sharing of emotion, a sharing of experience. So I think that that's a wonderful thing. The downside that I think you were alluding to is that doctors tend to be very busy. And so you have to make sure that you find time for each other. But I don't see the world in the colors that many other people do. People always go busy, 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 and I've got no time for anything. I don't believe that at all. I mean, you make time for the things that you value. And one of the best tests of what you value in life is what you make time for. If you say to someone, let's do coffee sometime, then you never do. It means you don't really care about them, because if you did, you'd make time for them. So I always find that no matter how busy you are, you can work very, very hard, but there is always time that you can make for your spouse and your kids and for the things that are truly important. So we always make time for each other. And one of the ways that that's achieved is that my wife is super fearsome. So she just like, if I'm not working on a Sunday, we're going out for the day as a family. And we call it random departure time in our house, because my wife has like this religious time that we're leaving. And it's like 9 on a Sunday morning, we're heading out on our picnic and it has to be 9. And it is 9:05. I'm getting dirty looks in the car. So she's very fearsome about that. But the reason why I obey that is because I think it's so important. And I always say to her, I'm glad you're strict with me about these things, because they're really important. And the truth is, I might be a bit slack on a Sunday otherwise and be doing my own thing. So I think it's really important that you pack me in a car, you know, with my cooperation or not, and off we go for the day together. And that's what, I mean, life is about memories. And those are the happy memories that we have, the things you do as a family, the holidays you go on, and you've got to make time for those things.
Yeah. So a real big theme here is protecting some time. So it sounds like your fearsome wife, if she knows you have some time off, she'll plan something for all as a family to make sure that you get that time. And then it sounds like another blessing in your lives is that you're able to talk about your work in a deep way. And that provides a source of connection and support for you both.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, if you're listening, you're like, I'm not a doctor. I can't talk to my partner about these things. I think, you know, you don't have to share the same profession, but you can still check in with each other about how was your day? Like, what was stressful? What was exciting? What was the hardest part? Were there any challenges that you had? And you don't need to know the answers. You don't need to solve the problem. You can just listen. Just listen. That's all you need to do. Just listen to what they have to say. You can ask these kinds of questions every day or a couple times a week to just gain a deeper knowledge of your partner's inner world and show interest and act and demonstrate you're there. And over time, you'll get a better understanding of their inner world and what's going on in their work life.
Absolutely. And I have such an interesting contrast to that to bring of an experience that I had. I'll de-identify the person, but I know someone very close to me who their father fought in a war for a long period. And he came home and his wife was just, and the kids were just never interested in anything that happened to him. And he had this like war bar in his house where he had like a bar with all his mementos from his photographs, from his soldiers, friends, and guns and whatever. And you can imagine this. I grew up in South Africa, you know, guns are a big thing, almost as big as the States, I guess. Everyone's got a gun and it's quite normal. So this person said to me, you know, dad's really irritating. He's always talking about the war and, you know, we're not interested kind of thing. And I said to them, you know something, have you ever thought about challenging your mom on that? Like, think about it. This poor guy's gone off and fought in a war for years and he needs to share that with people. And that emotion is something very significant to him. And he's been completely shut off by his family because it's irritating and you're not interested. I said, but think about it. And they said, you know something, you're right. I just grew up in a house where my mother always said, we're not interested. And so that's a very sad thing. So you're quite right. You don't have to go through something to empathize, to listen, and to, you know, make someone feel better about their experiences and share those experiences. I mean, in medicine all the time, we deal with people who are, you know, in terrible circumstances. You don't want to ever go through what they're going through, but that doesn't mean you can't make them feel better and be compassionate and empathic, even though you haven't been through that yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like this story you gave, this example, it just made me think you don't have to be interested in what your partner's interested in. You just need to be interested in your partner. That's it.
That's a brilliant line.
Yeah. Like, I don't care about my husband, like, loves watching fantasy, or he loves watching football. And he's in like 2 fantasy football leagues. And like, I don't care about it, but I know that he cares about it. So if I take interest in asking, like, how are your teams doing? It shows I'm interested in him. It takes what, 30 seconds out of my life every couple weeks to ask him about his fantasy football. Like, I don't care, but I care about him. And if you think about early dating, you don't really care about what your date is saying. Like, you kind of care, but like most of the time what they're saying isn't your interest, that you're just getting to know someone, but you're maybe excited to be on the date and you show that enthusiasm and you ask good questions and you follow up and you show with your facial expressions. Then after you've been together for 10 years, you're eating dinner and you're like, so how's your day? Good. You know, there's nothing there. But if you can act interested in your partner, even if you're not interested in what they're saying, that can really go a long way.
You're just proving to be awesome all the time, because I must say, as fantastic as my wife is, she's definitely not interested in the ball games that I watch and the teams that I support. So I'm going to be telling her about this tomorrow and saying, hey, you need to pull up your socks. I learned this last night. So yeah, I think that's absolutely fantastic that you do that. And you're quite right. My wife is taken up making things on a cricket. I don't know if you know what a cricket is. It's like this sort of 3D, low-grade 3D printer, and she's loves it. She's like sold 17 of her one design online. She thinks it's the greatest thing ever. It's like making like table decorations and things using a kind of a 3D printer. Well, I can tell you that whether I am interested or not, I'm very involved in these cricket designs. I mean, just this evening, she was saying, how should this frog look that I'm designing? Which cartoon frog do you like? I can tell you I showed a lot of interest, but then I don't know if, you know, I didn't have a lot of choice, to be honest, but yes, I was definitely very interested.
Yeah.
I hope I chose the right frog.
Hopefully you did. All right. Well, I've loved this conversation. If you had a wish, if listeners take one thing away from this, what do you hope they take away?
The wish I take away is that I think we're living through a very divisive time in the world where everyone seems to feel that they need to fight. And there's so much division and so much negativity in the language we use. And it's a sad thing for me that I felt like the world was coming together for a long time, that we all had this idea of, you know, an aspiration to be together and be, we're all human. We are different, but we're human. So I think the one message I'd love to send is, you know, men and women traditionally and over many millennia have actually made wonderful couples together. And you can go back and read literature from 1,000 years ago, and it's all about falling in love and the magic of that. And so don't lose that dream. It you know, there's nothing better than getting together, falling in love, getting married, having kids together. There could be no more miraculous, wonderful experience. So keep living that dream. And I hope people don't lose hope that that is something that people can experience and it's worthwhile and worth investing all your time and emotion in.
Yeah, amazing. So people are loving this conversation as much as I did. Where can they follow you, find you, contact you, learn more about you?
So I've got a website, drrickyaronson.com. I'm always very happy to chat to people, and anyone can leave a message on the website. And also, if you're interested, my book, Women Are Superior to Men, is a really fun book and hopefully something that people can read and feel more positive about their relationships through, I hope, and learn some approaches that may help them as well. And it's also about laughing and humor. So I hope people enjoy that.
I hope so. So we'll link both your website and the book to the show notes. So if you're interested in learning more or reading the book, checking it out, we'll link that to the show notes so that you can find it easily. All right, Ricky. Well, this was such a pleasure. I love just we talked so much about the positivity, bringing value, small things people can do, protecting their time, tips to get through conflict. This was so valuable. So I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here today and staying up late to give our listeners some value. This is amazing.
I've had the best time. And I think that's one of the most special things about writing a book that I didn't expect was meeting people like you. It's really just so wonderful to chat to someone like you halfway across the world and have such a special chat together. I'll remember it forever. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to Relationship Psych, the podcast put on by Ember Relationship Psychology. If you're looking for more free relationship help or advice that comes straight from the couples therapy room, check out the free resources and the blog at www.emberrelationshippsychology.com.